Welcome to 32, a podcast by the people behind the digital magazine 28. This is episode 3, and I'm one of your co-hosts, Eric Wire, and I'm joined with the other co-host, Greg Wire.
Hey everyone, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, no, glad to have you, and I'm glad to be recording this episode, actually the first episode of 2022. Unfortunately, this episode is not going to be about the Thomas Ligotti collection of short stories, Teatro Grotesco, which we suggested it might be. That is going to be delayed a little bit, but people can still look forward to hearing our thoughts about the sort of weird horror fiction that Ligotti is famous for, but that will be a little bit down the line.
So in the meantime, since some of the other episodes of this podcast were released, we're excited to say that the fourth volume of 28 was released early this year. That was a pretty long time coming. Both Eric and I put a lot of work into editing a lot of the content in it, and I think I can speak for both of us saying that we're really happy with how the whole issue turned out, and if you haven't checked that out yet, you really should go and download it.
Yeah, no, you can just get it on 28's website. And yeah, as Greg said, yeah, I think it's a great magazine, possibly the best one we've put out yet, just due to all the great content from all the different contributors and whatnot. So yeah, really good, really good.
I would say that even though we're about 2 months into the new year, I haven't had a huge amount of time to dedicate to the Warhammer hobby. However, I've still been able to keep involved in the gaming sense by playing a bunch of board games. And I know that Eric can say a similar thing. Games like Cosmic Encounter, Galaxy Trucker, The Crew, Railroad Inc., which is a roll and write game where you're setting down roadways and railways.
But that's right. Likewise, I haven't really had a huge amount of time to really do hobby related stuff. Like, I have some stuff set up to do, but I haven't really had the chance to really dive into it due to just various sort of life obligations and such. And what got us to really get back into playing board games again was a particular game called Root, a game of woodland might and right designed by Cole Worley and has art by Kyle Farron. And this particular game styles itself as an asymmetric war game, and that term maybe isn't something is thrown around too much, but if you think of a game like Risk, which is kind of a classic war board game, every faction in it, every player is trying to accomplish the same task. They're all governed by the exact same rules, trying to conquer territory and whatnot. In Root, as being the asymmetric sort of style game, each player is taking the role of a different faction that has pretty substantially different rules that all still fit within a general framework, but are quite different, all trying to accomplish these different goals to have their own particular victory condition.
This notion of playing this asymmetric war game got Eric and I to think about Games Workshop's games, which in and of themselves could be considered asymmetric war games too, in that each army that you're playing with have their own unique rules and own unique units, such that playing the game as the Space Marines isn't going to be the same as if you're playing the game playing the orcs per se.
Just the sort of similarities, but then also dichotomies between this board game and Warhammer 40,000 and other Games Workshop games got us thinking, you know what, this would be an interesting thing to talk about on this episode. So here we are. But I think it might be worth sort of stepping back and talking about just sort of our role in just playing Games Workshop games as of late. Over the years, I think both of us could say that we've somewhat lost interest in playing a lot of GW-style games, the sort of beer and pretzel games where you pick up a bucket of dice and roll them. And not that they're necessarily bad, but I find oftentimes the rules are a little bit bloated or cumbersome. There is not that much balance at times, and I don't find it often that engaging. And despite that, I sort of realized that for all of Games Workshop stuff, what I really liked about it was the evocative settings and stuff that were there, and just building and painting models. That was always what kept me here and wanting to just be engaged in the hobby, not necessarily the games themselves.
So to touch a little bit more on that, I found that I started to gravitate more towards the games that GW released that had really evocative and distinct settings. Things like Mordheim and Inquisitor have really stuck in my head long after they've been supported by GW, and that's mainly because of the power of their setting and the storytelling that was inherent in them, even if at this point I've largely forgotten how either game is played. And to the point with Mordheim, I didn't even play it when it was released. However, the setting and the imagery has stuck with me since I first saw it when it was released. I don't know how many years ago.
Yeah, and I guess so that has kind of been those sort of things, the modeling aspects and the great settings. It certainly is what kept me involved in the miniature hobby. But having said that, I still haven't really lost the desire to play strategic games and whatnot. But I have found that if I want to, I guess, for lack of a better term, scratch that itch, I tend to look towards board games, in that they tend to be designed that the focus of the game is on creating like compelling mechanics and giving like various engaging gameplay choices and stuff, rather than just what's the best way to sell more models. I think, for at least for me, they kind of stand in two different realms. With that said, some games, and Root, I think, would be one of them, which I think we'll touch on a little bit, it also does a good job of creating an evocative setting as well.
With that in mind, perhaps let's start talking about the game Root. I think it's important to at least touch a little bit upon the designer, Cole Worley, in that he comes from more of an academic background, in that he studied history and literature and how those things kind of combine with one another. And that has certainly impacted the games that he designs.
Yeah, and like one of game that really sticks out to me is a game called Pax Pamir, which it's interesting in that it's taken, you take the role of a 19th century Afghan leader attempting to kind of forge a new state while trying to ally in with either Great Britain or Russia, as they're all trying to maneuver and have some role in the formation of like a new state. So it deals with that, the great game historical period in the Afghan world. So it's sort of an interesting look at that historical aspect.
With games like that, I think designers are often trying to help give the players a better understanding of perhaps a historical conflict and give you the opportunity to influence how they might play out, to learn from that.
Mm-hmm.
And with Root, from my understanding, he wanted to try to make a war game, like a brutal war game, that might appeal to a group of players who wouldn't normally want to play that. in that some board gamers prefer more cooperative games, not games where you're beating the crap out of one another. So he wanted to try to make a war game where you were constantly battling other people, but make it in such a way that people who normally wouldn't gravitate to that might give it a try.
Yeah, make it a little bit more accessible. And I guess a major way that he went about this was, even though it is a war game, it's set around a sort of like Robin Hood folklore medieval setting, which has anthropomorphic animals fighting. So each faction, each of the core four factions is sort of a different animal. And the artist Kyle Farron did all the artwork for the game, and it's delightful. It's hard to oversell just how great the artwork is. It's very charming and humorous, but also, you know, little robins with bow and arrows and whatnot, and it's really fun, something that people should look at themselves.
So as Eric had alluded to, there are different factions in the game that you can play, of which there are four: a group of cats, a group of birds, a vagabond, which is essentially a little raccoon that runs around completing quests and harassing the other players, and then the Woodland Alliance, which is a gathering of forest creatures trying to overthrow the oppressive rule of the cats or the birds.
After you choose one of these four factions, the ultimate goal of the game is actually to score 30 points, 30 victory points, and that is primarily done by trying to conquer various regions of the game board, which is a big woodland area, and there are various clearings spread throughout this forest that you're trying to move pieces around and gain control of those so you can like build buildings or recruit more warriors and different things depending on the actual faction you are using. And all of the actions that you're doing, battling other people, building, spreading sympathy, all these will gain victory points in various ways that you're all trying to accomplish. And there are a few shared ways to get victory points, like crafting items and things like this, but in general, everyone's sort of approaching their generation of victory points a little bit differently depending on the faction you're using.
Yeah, that's one of the things that makes the game so interesting, in that each of the factions play quite differently, such that in your first game, you're probably going to be spending most of the game just making sure you know how to play your faction, and you won't probably be paying too much attention to the intricacies of the other factions. But as you get more familiar with it, you'll find that there's a lot of neat interplay between the different factions and a lot of fun nuances to consider through all of it.
Yeah, that also ends up allowing for fun opportunities for table talk and trying to encourage other players to do different things and say like, oh, if you go and kind of attack this other player's pieces, I'll do this later, and trying to form temporary alliances and things like this to perhaps to prevent someone from winning or just to slightly improve your standing at the board. And this sort of way that all the factions entangle and intermesh with each other is really enjoyable. With that general notion in mind, maybe we talk a little bit more in depth about each of the factions and sort of what they're trying to do.
Yeah, one of the things that I really like about the game is how it does a very good job of helping to tell a story, but that is largely just through its mechanics. The game itself, the rulebook, peppers in a small amount of background to it, but most of the story is told by the gameplay, and also there's a lot of artwork on particular cards that you're playing throughout the game, and the great artwork by the aforementioned Kyle Farren really helps tell the story as well. So the first faction that you can play is the Marquis de Cat. So that's the faction of cats. They, based on the lore, have just taken over the woodland, overthrowing the bird faction, the Eerie Dynasties. So the Eerie Dynasty was just recovering from a vicious civil war, and that opened up a power vacuum for the Marquis de Cat to slide in and take over the forest. And the Marquis de Cat are coming from a more urban environment, and their goal is to try to urbanize the woodland. So their way, or their primary way of winning and gaining victory points, is by building structures in the various clearings around the map. So they're trying to control clearings and build things to win. They're perhaps the most straightforward of the factions.
Yeah, because they're sort of like almost like a city builder type thing. Whereas, yeah, the Eerie Dynasty, Greg mentioned briefly, they're the bird faction, and they had been the rulers of the woodland, but they sort of lost control of this due to like a civil war that occurred that divided all the various birds within the woodland, and that ends up leaving them that they only control a single clearing on the map or on the game board, which is actually directly opposite to sort of the stronghold of the Marquis de Cat. And their sort of interesting thing kind of represents the arrogance of the birds, which also presumably led to the civil war, and that kind of all the various bird potential leaders all have strong opinions on what should be done, such that when you start the game, you actually have to choose one of four bird leaders that all kind of have different priorities. One is a murderous owl that wants to do a lot of battles and such, whereas another is more focused on building additional roosts or their buildings to recruit more warriors and whatnot. But how you actually play with them, you have to each turn assign different cards to what they refer to as a decree that you're sort of permanently saying to your the bird disciples you're ruling, like, every turn I'm going to move, I'm going to battle, and then maybe I'm going to build something. And each progressive turn, you have to add more and more things to this decree of what you're going to do. And if ever you fail to do one of those things because, you know, you run out of actions or run out of warriors or can't find a place to build a building or something, you fall into turmoil and the other birds kick that leader out and you lose some victory points and you don't have to completely start over, but your sort of action economy gets badly diminished.
Yeah, so it's pretty neat. You're kind of doing or playing a programming game in the sense that each turn you are adding to a list of actions that you need to do every turn. If you ever can't do all of those actions in the order that they're presented in, yeah, as Eric said, your leader gets ousted. You have to choose a new leader and kind of start that over again. So it does kind of speak to the arrogance of the birds. Like, they feel like they know exactly what needs to be done and you have to do all these things. And if they fail just once, all the other birds are pissed.
Yeah. And it's very interesting because the cat player, one of their core restrictions is they can only ever do three actions a turn. Although there's one method that you can discard like particular cards to get like an additional action, but in general they're very restricted in the amount of things they can do a turn. Whereas the birds, the Eerie Dynasties, every turn you can get more and more actions. It's just they're slightly restricted into what they must be and the order that they happen. So it's sort of a different sort of juggling act. Whereas then the third faction is called the Woodland Alliance, and they don't even start with any pieces on the board, and they're kind of like a faction of sort of unrest that's growing within the woodland, within all the just regular common folk, per se, that they're tired of being oppressed by the birds that had just had a bloody civil war and these new cats that have come in to take over. So you're trying to spread sympathy amongst the various clearings throughout the woodland for your cause, to try to overthrow these oppressive tyrants. And so you slowly spread sympathy between clearings until you can precipitate or cause a bloody revolt in which all the members of that clearing there destroy and kill all the other factions that were there, like kill all the birds or cats or whatnot are going to be there. So they're very interesting in that way, and that they don't have any pieces to start with, and they slowly kind of creep along, adding supporters, gaining supporters throughout the map until they can overthrow their oppressive overlords.
And it's almost like the Woodland Alliance are like the Rebel Alliance in Star Wars. However, I feel in this game, the Woodland Alliance have a little bit more of a darker take, because as Eric said, you're spreading sympathy around the woodland. And then once you have enough sympathy, you can almost like throw a terroristic attack and kill all of the birds or cats that might be in a particular clearing and start your own base. And from that base of operations, you can send your Woodland Alliance warriors to other clearings and martyr them to gain sympathy in new places. So it's a very interesting system where the mechanics of the faction work very well with portraying the idea of what the Woodland Alliance wants to do and how they're going to do it.
Yeah, because then all these sort of military actions in which they're moving, battling, or martyring themselves are all done in the evening phase of the game, whereas most of the other factions, like the cats or the birds, the primary actions they're doing happen in the daylight, but not the Woodland Alliance, as they're trying to spread their insurgent cause throughout the woodland.
Yeah, and sneakily overthrow people in the cover of the night.
Yeah. And I guess then the last faction is pretty different from the others in the fact that it's not actually an army faction. It's a single piece, or the Vagabond, who is just a adventuring roguelike character that travels around the woodland, like exploring ruins to try to find items and whatnot, as well as completing various quests to help different people with sort of in the woodland clearings, as well as also either aiding some of the other factions by giving them cards and stuff to take crafted items, as well as just being a nuisance to other factions, perhaps killing some of their pieces and becoming hostile and whatnot. But yeah, they're pretty different in that since it's only a single piece, how you do your actions are linked to what sort of items you have.
So as I touched on a little bit earlier, one of the things that's really neat about the game is as you first start playing, you're mainly interested in how does the faction you're working with, how do they work, and figuring that puzzle out. But as you play more games, you can start to look at how your faction interplays with the other factions, and that makes the initial puzzle all the more interesting.
No, yeah, it's really fun to sort of get entangled in some of the politics and other elements of other people's games, as well as try to encourage other players to maybe help stop a particular player who's starting to run away with the victory points. And there's a lot of table talk opportunities to try to sway the game to go one way or another. For example, maybe the Eerie Dynasty is getting really powerful, has a lot of presence on the board. You might try to encourage, hey, Vagabond, you should maybe go over to one of their clearings and destroy an important building that will, in the next turn, force the Eerie to fall into turmoil and kick out their leader, such that they're kind of stopped, and give other players more opportunity to catch up in victory points. Or maybe one of the cat players, let's destroy particular buildings to slow them down. Or even trying to build up militarized presence to prevent the Woodland Alliance from getting more sympathy into different clearings. And all of this is just, fun puzzle, kind of like you mentioned, Greg, and one that you can try to convince other people playing the game to do things and convince them this is in your best interest, when maybe it's not, and it is kind of a game within a game, which is really fun.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been this excited about the board game in a while. Eric, you and I have now played quite a few games. Admittedly, all of the games that I have played with this were played digitally, and there's a good digital adaptation of the game.
The digital version is released by Direwolf Studios, and it's an official sort of licensed thing from Leader Games, who creates Root. But yeah, in this digital app version, you can get pretty much on all platforms. You can get it on Steam to play on the computer. You can get it on the Switch, an iPad, an iOS, Android, all these different things. And all of the different platforms are synced together. So it's a pretty good and fairly inexpensive way to be able to see if it's a game that you're interested in playing, and be able to play against AI versions of the stuff, as well as play against other people. And it's also kind of a helpful way to get initiated into the game, in the sense that because there are all these different factions with unique rules, it can be a little bit difficult the first time you're playing it, if you're not playing with other experienced players, to maybe get a few things wrong, do some rule things incorrectly. But in the digital version, it's somewhat helpful in that there are guide rails, in the sense that you can't cheat inadvertently.
And wow, it probably sounds like the game's super complicated, and it kind of is. I feel that it is a very elegant system, and once you have a few games under your belt, it stops being, oh boy, do I know the rules, and it starts to become, as we mentioned, a fun puzzle of how can I utilize my faction's strengths to secure victory over.
Yeah, while also trying to engage with other players and convince them that, they really have to do this, or that other player is really the most threat, where perhaps they're not. And I guess, in addition to the Direwolf digital version of it, you can also, there's a good mod on Tabletop Simulator that allows you to play there. So if that's something that people already have, you can download the mod for it, because I know a lot of people actually play Warhammer 40,000 on Tabletop Simulator as well. So yeah, you can play that there as well. Which, and towards that end, currently the game Root has a few expansions, most of which actually just add additional factions to the game. They don't really change the core rules, just add additional factions. And the Tabletop Simulator version has all the different factions that are available, whereas the Direwolf digital app only has kind of the first main expansion, which adds a group of mercantile otters that kind of sell their service as mercenaries and weapon, like arms dealers. And then there is also a lizard cult that worships like some sort of elder dragon god that's trying to spread its cultists throughout the woodland. But there are a few other factions as well, but we don't really have time to go over all of that. But I think if you're interested in the game, it would be worth checking out. And all the art, again, for them as well, is really charming and helps sort of establish the world and get you excited about it. I guess it may also be worth noting that there's actually a growing tournament presence for the game as well. A lot of it's through Tabletop Simulator just because of COVID sort of slowing down and shutting down conventions and that sort of thing. But one of the newer expansions added sort of a different drafting advanced setup that allows even more sort of strategy to go in how you set up your factions to make even more competitive games, which might be interesting to people if that's something they really like, kind of a competitive aspect of a game.
So with that, I feel like I just want to stress how much I have enjoyed playing Root over the past few weeks and how it helped remind me that I do actually like playing strategy games, even if I haven't played a lot of Games Workshop games in a while. And what I particularly like about Root is how it does a great job of telling a story through gameplay and also through the excellent art on the cards and such, to the point that anybody who's interested in a game that can help tell a rich story, you should really consider checking out Root. And as Eric said, since there's this digital adaption, which can be acquired fairly cheaply and played on your phones or tablets or a PC,
it's never really been easier to just get involved in playing the game and see if it's something you're interested in, particularly if you already play other board games and have a board gaming group that likes kind of strategy games and things of that nature. It might be something to consider, particularly after getting a sense of the rules first with the either Tabletop Simulator or the app. So I feel it's pretty easy to get involved in it and see if it's something that you might like. But yeah, I would certainly encourage it as just another way to be able to play strategy type games that don't necessarily need a $3,000 investment in models and a huge amount of hour investment in building and painting things. Not that they're a bad thing. I still love that hobby as well, but I have a tendency to focus on the 28 style ethos of things rather than playing 2,000 point games. But
yeah, so everybody should check out Root.
Yeah, I would certainly encourage it. But I guess with that, thanks everybody for listening to another episode of 32, and we hope to be back again within the next month or so talking about something else tangentially related to the miniature wargaming hobby or just something that the people at 28 are interested in. So, yep, talk to you later, everybody.